This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
All right, so I have a banter that, full disclosure, Joe supplied to me because, you know, regular listeners will know Joe does all the work and Leslie and I and the guests just show up and talk and then let Joe handle everything else. Anyway, so Eric Kleinenberg at NYU was reacting to a Wall Street Journal article talking about how people are increasingly lonely and loneliness leads to morbidity, mortality, all sorts of problems. Maybe it's tied into kind of the Case Deaton type stuff of suicide, drug abuse, alcoholism, you know, all those poisoning deaths and suicide deaths, all that sort of thing. And Eric tweets a link to the article and says, "Dear journalists, loneliness can be dangerous, but living alone is not the same as being lonely. Living alone is not the same as being isolated. Feeling lonely does not mean one is socially isolated. There's no strong evidence we're lonelier than ever." I like that word, strong. That's a nice catch-all. And then he says, "Thanks." And then Brad Wilcox at UVA quote tweeted Eric and said, "Dear journalists, living alone is associated with more suicide, opioid abuse, poverty, and checks notes, dying alone in a heat wave," which of course was, you know, Eric's first big book. "There's strong evidence we're living alone more than ever. Thanks." So, you know, it's interesting dialogue there. If for no other reason than that little mic drop moment of basically saying, you know, your own most famous book goes against your point. But even aside from that, it's kind of an interesting thing. And what I see Eric doing is doing a style of argument that I'm really not fond of, which is basically invoking existence proofs to counter an argument about a statistical tendency.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's it? Yeah, can you explain that to me, please?
Well, so let's say that I say that education is associated with lower fertility in women.
Right.
And you say, well, but I know someone, I know a woman who has a PhD and she has five children. Mm-hmm. And okay, so that would demonstrate that education doesn't preclude high fertility among women, mm-hmm. but it doesn't tell us anything about whether it's statistically associated with it. And to a first approximation, nothing in social science is a strictly deterministic relationship. So right. we shouldn't really care about existence proofs. Because nobody's really claiming the contrary. And, you know, it is true that loneliness and living alone are not synonymous. Yeah, you know, that you can, you know, be in a sole person in your household and still be quite socially engaged and socially connected. But, you know, as I think Brad is pointing out, if you had to bet, you know, living alone is probably associated with being lonely. And it kind of doesn't matter because whether we call it loneliness or living alone and, you know, kind of make the little leap, it's nonetheless the fact that the thing we can directly observe, this concrete fact of are you the only person in your household, is associated with a whole lot of bad outcomes that we would theoretically associate with the subjective psychological experience of loneliness.
Right. Here's my issue with that one, right? Like Eric Kleinenberg is arguing against deterministic relationships, right? He's saying like just because you're alone.
But Brad isn't arguing that either. Well, I mean, Brad's not saying that it. You know.
Brad seems to be making a more positive assertion, right? He's saying living alone is associated more with these things. Now, I don't know if he's implying that like there's causality there because like there's not. I mean, wait, you don't think
there's causality between living alone and killing yourself?
Here's the thing. I worry, okay, whenever you have a regression that checks the effects of being married or living alone, right? It's net of what? Yeah. 8, 10, 12 controls, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like there in my mind, there is likely to be a lot of omitted variable bias in these things. Like if you're a paranoid schizophrenic, you're probably not going to, let's say I argue the proposition that being unmarried causes poverty. Like I argue it's associated in my work, right? Mm-hmm. But like if you're a paranoid schizophrenic or you have agoraphobia or like even like if you're a low education person, like there's the potential for a lot of spurious relationships that are being picked up in the marriage effect or in the residual or probably some combination of it, right? So yes, I get that there is a marriage effect. I'm just like – the quantitative evidence alone, just I have trouble accepting that the institution of marriage itself is a causal factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is sufficiently free of spurious relationships, because
so technically we're not talking about marriage, we're talking about living alone.
Right. There's
other ways to, you know, obviously the most common way to not be, actually I don't know if that's even statistically true, but a very common way and historically the normative way to not be alone is to be married. But you can cohabit, or you can have another member of your household who you're not in a romantic relationship with.
Yeah. But I see what
roommate,
but I
you
see
children,
what
you live with a sibling, you know.
But I get Joe's point. I mean, I think what Joe's trying to say is like there's like a selection issue, right? Into who gets to be in a household of more than one, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and that's going to account for some of the variance, but I think there's plenty of people who we can imagine a reasonable counterfactual where they are living with someone. And in that reasonable counterfactual, I think they would be less likely to kill themselves, less likely to abuse drugs. You know,
yeah, but also,
almost mathematically, if the other person is also a wage earner, they would be less likely to experience poverty.
But also, like, we had Christine Prochesky on a couple weeks ago, and she found, like, if somebody starts doing drugs or if they're an alcoholic, mm-hmm. then they're more likely to be divorced. And so they would be alone. But I could see the alcoholism being the causal factor. You know what I, you know,
well,
what I'm
alcohol
saying?
Is classically endogenous. And I can quote, you know, the great authority on social science, The Simpsons, where Homer says, alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Oh my.
Ju Young, you got any thoughts on this one? Or?
Well, it's super interesting to hear you all talk about this. When I read Eric's tweet, I thought he was making a very interesting distinction that, sometimes I think we sort of gloss over. He's saying living alone, which is sort of a status, is not the same as being lonely, which is an emotional state or something that could be a persistent emotional state that might be associated with a number of mental health outcomes or issues. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a pretty interesting thing. And I thought about a lot of, one of my students actually at Toronto is studying how people connect through online gaming communities. And he's looking at sort of communities that crop up around various games that you play with other people. Like one of them is PUBG. It's this battle royale game. And he himself, when he approached me about this project, was saying like, I'm a lonely person. I've sort of always felt that way. But being able to game with these people on a regular basis, the same people who I've never met, but I know their gamer tags, they know me, they know about my life, has been sort of a way that he, I guess, has combated the feeling of loneliness while living alone. So I thought that was an interesting distinction that Eric was making, at least in his tweet.
Yeah, and you can form such intense relationships through online gaming communities, you eventually end up swatting your friends.
Oh. Hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Well, part of like what that tweet actually led me to think about is this piece that I read in The Atlantic. I don't even remember when it came out, but it's fairly recent. And it's, the title was The Sex Recession, right? Mm-hmm. And in reading through the article, I was, part of what I was trying to figure out is like, which comes first, right? So there are all of these lonely people, right? And because they're lonely, they're not having sex, right? Or is it the fact that they're not having sex that makes them feel lonely, right? And it's this weird kind of self-fulfilling, prophecy. Right.
Like either like they are like, well, there's a lot of asexual people, first of all. And like, I wonder if it's harder to keep a marriage together when you're asexual, for example. Are you thinking along those lines or?
No, I mean, it's like, so the article basically said everyone seems to be having less sex now. Right. Yeah. And they were like, what the heck is that? Including like the youngins, right? They're not, they're having a lot less sex. And, there are a variety. They give a variety of reasons, right? Of course, technology, right? This push to create new technologies actually that don't that don't necessitate having more than one person being part of it, right? Like they talk about, actually, they, like it made me think about Kleinenberg, because they actually talked about the book that he co-wrote with Aziz Ansari. And there's that one portion of the book where they're in Tokyo and Ansari goes into like this convenience store and gets this silicone egg that's supposed to be used by guys to, you know, and basically he, you know, I think Ansari's take on it was like, you know what, right? I get it. I mean, it's not for me, but I get it, right? It's a way to, you know, get your thing on without having to engage with another person, without having to put yourself out there. Right. And I don't know, that seems like a really, really scary reality. Right.
Well, I can tell you my wife, who's really going to enjoy this episode.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.